through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacy is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. John Clayton joining us in just one moment. Going to take you guys back through a trade the Seahawks reportedly made this morning. It was for 31-year-old Bengals pass rusher Carlos Dunlap. He's second all-time in Bengals history in career sacks. Things had soured a bit this year, though, between Dunlap and the Bengals. The former second-round pick was in his first season ever as a backup and was one of few pass rushers who seemed up for grabs at the trade deadline. John Clayton joining us right now. John, is this a trade that can help Seattle immediately? I know Dunlap won't be able to play this weekend, but is he a guy that's competing immediately for starting time once the Seahawks go on the road to face the Bills?
No, I think until he learns the defense, he's got to be able to, you know, kind of break in a little bit slowly. But I think the big thing is, you know, he can come into the rotation and help out. And, you know, because if you go even back to 2013, as crazy as this sounds, but this is all true, you know, when they made the big free agent moves and got Cliff Avril and they got Michael Bennett, they weren't starters. You know, they got paid well, but, you know, they came in and they were in the rotation in a nickel and played there and got, you know, 65% of the snaps. In this case, you know, I think, you know, they started out that, you know, let Dunlap come in and against the Buffalo Bills, maybe get him in there for 20, 25 plays. And this is where you're going to start seeing the changes. And if there's going to be improvement on the defensive line, but for talent, there should be, because you noticed yesterday, Anthony Rush was cut by the Seahawks. That opens the door now for Damon Snacks Harrison to be available in the game Sunday. And unless he has a setback, or I think you'll see him play, and that'll help the run stopping against the 49ers' good run game. And then, you know, the next week, Dunlap should be able to start to go, because at least he'll have cleared his COVID test. You know, it's not as if he hadn't played. It's just they took away his playing time in the last three games. And so, no, I think it's going to help. But also understand that I don't think John Snyder's done. There's a little bit of a salary cap gap in picking up Dunlap's contract versus the B.J. Finney trade. And so, you know, they've either got to readjust some salaries or they got to try to go ahead and maybe trade another player and maybe get a draft choice or so.
Why had things soured between Dunlap and the Bengals over in Cincinnati? Because while I do, John, love the pettiness of, yeah, like placing your home up for sale and announcing that it's up for sale on Twitter, like a champion of pettiness, I am. I also think that that's a pretty far way to fall with your own organization. What happened there?
Well, what happened is that the coaching staff basically took the position they wanted to get younger. And of course, you know, here's Carlos Dunlap, here's Geno Atkins, you know, two of the mainstays of that defense for the longest period of time. And right now, mainstays of a defense that has not been winning and right now has been terrible. And so, you know, in the last couple of games, they started taking away his playing time, and, you know, he was angry about it because his playing time is almost down to hardly nothing in the last couple of games, and you can see him being upset. And so here's a guy that's been to two Pro Bowls. He's got 82 and a half sacks. He's a leader on the team, and he's been playing behind guys that he doesn't know. And this also on a defense that's had injuries. Like Sam Hubbard, defensive end, you know, he gets an injury and goes on injured reserve, and that doesn't get you know, him back on the field. So, you know, Dunlap felt kind of abused and ignored, and not them not wanting to take care of him to a point where it's like, okay, if that's the case, get me out of here, and they got him out of there.
You know, John, it is interesting with players like this, with Carlos Dunlap, and you've seen this happen really over the last two seasons. This has really been a trend that players are going to sometimes, to get themselves out the door, they've got to really make a mess of a situation. Do you think that Carlos Dunlap is a problem? Does he have a problem personality? Or do you think that he was, you know, trying to make this as messy as possible to force their hand?
No, maybe he was trying to be smart about it, to be messy as possible and get himself out of a bad situation. Because, I mean, you got a Cincinnati team that's going to be probably drafting again in the top five or six. You know, the only reason it wouldn't be that way is you have so many other bad teams. They're all fighting for those top spots. But, you know, the defense has been embarrassing, maybe not as bad as the offensive line. But, you know, this is a proud guy. I mean, again, you're talking about, you know, the Bengal sack leader. You've never heard anything bad from him in his entire career. And so this year they just said, oh, got a coaching staff, we want to go younger. Well, if you go younger and you start to ignore the veteran players who are leaders and then they're no longer leaders, it's time to move on. And so they moved on.
John, this seems to be such a seller's market right now. I mean, a very unique time, and you're hearing like the Dallas Cowboys that they're almost in fire sale mode. How much of that is real? How much of a seller's market is this? And you mentioned that the Seahawks could potentially not be done. Mm-hmm. Do you think that they could dip their toe back into this market, or are they done and just trying to maybe acquire a draft pick?
No, I think that they've got now they're down to what, five draft picks next year. So I think if they can, that's why I keep on unfortunately bringing up the name Jacob Hollister, because I think he's somebody that can net a seventh round pick. It may not be much, but of course they only gave up a seventh round pick to get Dunlap along with B.J. Finney. So I think that that could be one possibility there. And then the other possibilities, I think you just saw Dontari Poe and Daryl Worley. They end up finding out today that they told him the other day, is like, okay, go home. We're either going to cut or trade you. Well, they just cut him today. And so now that's three players that are off the roster for the Cowboys. And what you're seeing is the 10 teams, and I'm kind of surprised that the Cowboys are kind of selling out right now, because they still have a chance to win the division with five or six wins, that what you're looking at is that they're a seller, Jets are a seller, Houston's a seller. All these teams that are going to be eliminated in the playoffs in the next 2 weeks pretty much are all sellers, because what do you have to gain? Nothing. I mean, you had Atlanta. They go ahead and they say, hey, we're 0-5. This was a make or break year. Playoffs are bust for the coach and the general manager. 0-5, not making the playoffs. Let them go.
Jake's right. It is a seller's market. But if we were to get, if we were to try to get a player who's currently productive, not a guy like Dunlap who could be at the end, could be, what would it take? What would the Seahawks have to give up to get somebody who's currently productive in terms of draft picks?
I mean, right now the market is pretty much, because I know the other day when I was talking about Everson Griffin, I thought it was going to be a sixth round pick, because if you're trading a veteran that is making money, and he was making $6 million a year, you get a discount sale. And so, like for example, in this case, you have to say that the Bengals really helped out the Seahawks, because not only did they take just a seventh-round pick, but they took B.J. Finney's contract off their cap both this year and next year. And even though it was, what, $3.5 million, which isn't bad, it did help them out, because, they could have tried to hold out for maybe a sixth-round pick, but something of that nature. But no, I think what it comes down to is that, you get what you can get. And again, you have to look at the teams that are bad, and part of the reason some of the teams are bad is they don't have any talent. I mean, what would you want from the Jets? Tom, sorry about this. What would you want from the Giants? I mean, they traded Marcus Golden, and guess what they got? A sixth round pick. And so, if you're looking for pass rushers, if those teams don't have the pass rushers, there's not much you can do. Like, for example, the one guy that intrigues me in addition on Dallas is, Aldon Smith, because Aldon Smith's making, what, a one-year contract at $1.25 million. That's very reasonable, because you can fit that in the cap, and you still can get him for probably a cheap pick.
Can we get Blake Martinez?
No. He's making $10 million a year. Why would you want Blake Martinez? You want another linebacker?
Yeah, line him up at Leo.
He's never done that. I mean, let's put it this way. Cal Fracco would be a better fit, because he can rush the quarterback. I mean, Martinez is more the middle linebacker, inside linebacker, who can stuff the middle. But Fracco...
Yeah, I'm not. I don't want anybody from the Giants. I was just trying to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, that's true. Although, I'll tell you, the guy that people would want, it wouldn't be Seattle, is James Bradbury, because he's having a great season.
Yeah.
John, is there, what other targets do you see Seattle going for here? I know we've kind of been talking about this with some other guys, but is there anyone else that may also be a street free agent? I know Dontari Poe just recently cut by the Cowboys.
Yeah, but the thing with Dontari Poe is that he's a defensive tackle, and Pro Football Focus has had him as the worst tackle in football. He's had like the 89th rating as far as defensive tackles, worse than anybody else, and you can see it on the field. And so,
So that's a no.
I'd say no.
That's a no.
Not on Dontari Poe.
I mean, Jake's, I know that Jake talked to you about this, but he's been championing J.J. Watt. I mean, is there someone that you are kind of keeping your eye on with other teams here?
I'm still kind of wondering about Tack McKinley It's unfortunate that he's not going to play the Thursday night game because he's still injured. You know, I think, you know, he's a former first-round pick, and he's that quick twitch type of guy. Now, it didn't work out. They didn't give him the fifth-year option, and, you know, he's not going to be with the team next year. But, you know, he's a guy that at a moderate price that you, I think, could help out because, again, you know, you want as much as you can. I think you concentrate everything on the defensive line because that's where the change is needed. You know, I don't know if there's a cornerback that can come in cheaply that you really want to do. You know, maybe there is, maybe there isn't. But, you know, I think the big thing is you want as much on the defensive line to get the pressure so you can get that four-man rush with the possibility you can actually have a game where you're playing Kyler Murray and you get more than one pressure and no quarterback hits and no sacks on 48 passes. You know, that's the big thing that needs to be addressed, and they at least addressed it. And, again, you'll see snacks probably this week, and you'll see certainly Carlos Dunlap next week.
John, Pete Carroll was on with the San Francisco radio and with the 49ers media, and he was asked about the defense, and he just pretty much straight up said, hey, we're not going to be like this for much longer now. We're going to turn this thing around, essentially, is what he was getting at. Do you foresee that happening, or do you think that this is just kind of the defense who they're going to be?
Well, again, it's like, let's see how the changes work, because if they do work, I mean, you know there is – now two additions that haven't been on the field yet for this team. Let's see what kind of difference that can make. And so, you know, that along with the fact that, you know, they certainly need Jamal Adams back with his blitzing ability, his playmaking ability and everything else. And, you know, that seems to work. I mean, you can see there was certainly a real good game by Jordan Brooks. He played real well and did a lot of good things. And so now that speed has been added to the defense. But again, the problem is if you can't get to the quarterback, I mean, you saw it last year. You get 28 sacks and have to play soft zones, have everything in front of you, but get beat on the crossing patterns.
John, one last question here for you. We look at the 49ers, and we're looking at, you know, this matchup here. What are some of the keys in your mind that has to get done in order for the Seahawks to be able to win this really pivotal game against the 49ers?
Well, I know we talked about this earlier today, is that it was a 15-catch, 200-yard day for Tyler Lockett. I think this game now switches over to DK Metcalf, because is there anybody that can match up against him? We still don't know the injury report on the 49ers to see if Richard Sherman's going to be available, but I know a couple weeks ago he had the calf injury, got a little bit worse, so he may or may not be there. You know, they will get Kawan Williams back off the injured reserve list. He's one of the best slot cornerbacks in the league, and so you figure that he's going to probably match up a lot against Lockett. But, you know, can Jason Verrett, you know, can Emmanuel Mosley match up against DK Metcalf? And that's a big if right now. And so that, I think, is going to be one of the big ones to watch. And then certainly, you know, it certainly helps Seattle that Deebo Samuel is not going to be able to play for a couple weeks because of the hamstring injury. And so now, running back-wise, you know, they go to Jarrett the Jet McKinnon. You know, they probably are going to get maybe one back from the injured list, you know, and but again, they are so ravaged with injuries that it's really kind of a tough thing.
John, are we going to see either Jamal Adams or Chris Carson this Sunday?
We'll get a better idea in about, 16 minutes when Pete Carroll talks, to say, you know, either one, you know, went through the walkthrough and has a chance to play. I mean, he seemed pessimistic about Adams on Monday. Carlos Hyde is an important player. They've got to have some way to get him because, you know, you talk about creative in the backfield, and I don't know if it's going to be, you know, Tom or you, Stacy, or Jake Heaps. I mean, they may have to put you out there at running back, because
I would happily do that, John. I think, yeah, I could handle it.
There you go. Because, I mean,
I can't block.
What's that? Okay, you go on the early downs.
Block.
You go first and second down.
Be a pass catcher. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, they've got to be creative, because if they're going to be down three or four running backs, that's not going to be a good thing. I mean, you know, certainly you look at San Francisco, and they're not going to feel sorry for this, because, you know, they've got, you know, they're down at least three running backs. And so, you know, it's not going to be easy. But again, you just have to make the best of a situation, as every team's doing with the injury reports.
Now, John, would you have me as a 4 or 5-star running back recruit?
I'd say it would have to be more 4, because, you know, I mean, you know, what, 102 pounds? It's like you're not going to be able to do the power stuff.
That's okay, John. I understand.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, you're going to have to be more that third down back, and so that kind of takes you down to a four.
Very fair. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Okay.
We learned so much, as always. He is the professor, John Clayton. Thanks, John. All right, let's go ahead and get to four down territory.
This is four down territory
with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
102 pounds. What's that, about a pound heavier than Travis Homer?
You know, John knocked off quite a few pounds for me there, which I appreciate. 102. I think I weighed 102 pounds in, like, sixth grade.
Really?
Yeah.
I wrestled at 103.
Nice.
Disaster.
Nice.
All right, Jake, what does Carlos Dunlap bring to the table for the Seahawks? Because he better bring something.
Oh, he's definitely bring more than one thing. This guy's not a one-trick pony. This guy has the ability to get after the quarterback. His lowest in his career, in his 10-year career thus far, has been 7.5 sacks. Combined tackles, I mean, he just came off of a 63 combined tackles type of season last year. He has been a disruptor. He's been a guy who can get tackles for loss, quarterback hits. This is a very good overall, well-rounded player. 6'6", 285 pounds. This is a long, lanky guy who can cover ground. And so I think that when what you get with Carlos Dunlap is a player who can be disruptive. He can play both the five technique and the Leo position, so he brings great versatility for you. He just brings the ability to keep he raises your ability to make plays on the defensive line. He also allows everybody else on the defensive line to get a breather. I mean, Benson Mayowa has been playing an insane number of snaps each and every single game. That's not what he should be doing. So between him and Carlos Dunlap, I think it'll be a very good, solid rotation at that Leo position, and also with Rasheem Green and LJ Collier at five technique. So I think Carlos Dunlap brings a lot to the table. He's going to be a good player for this group. He definitely makes this defense better.
Second down. Stacey, what's the back end of this deal look like for the Seahawks in terms of finance?
So these numbers are from Over the Cap. SpotTrack also has them. There's a little bit of a difference, just a couple hundred thousand, but this is a rough estimate. Obviously, the Seahawks are the only ones who know these numbers. So the Seahawks were estimated to have about $3.7 million in cap space, just under $4 million before the trade. You free up about $2 million, a little over $2 million, by releasing B.J. Finney. So that gives you under $6 million, about $5.5 million. So Carlos Dunlap takes up 4.8, which means you're right in there at as far as like being one or less than that million in cap space right now. So the trade itself works out for you financially. You were able to get it done. You don't have to make a lot of drastic moves. If the Seahawks, though, like Jake is saying, like John Clayton are saying, are planning on making another move, they will have to make some kind of corresponding move. That could be freeing up cap space by trading another player. Jacob Hollister's name has been thrown around by a couple folks, Bill Barnwell being one of those guys. He takes up about a little over $2 million in salary cap space. That's probably around what you'd need. Obviously, it doesn't have to be Jacob Hollister. They just have to have they happen to have a bevy of talent at tight end. But you would have to make some kind of move, most likely, if you wanted to add someone else to fit that in under the salary cap. But for right now, you're mostly good.
Third down. Jake, what's your expectation now for the defense after having acquired Dunlap? Are we going to go from like 32nd to second, or what's going to happen here?
No, they're not going to go that dramatic. But if you get back Jamal Adams, Snacks Harrison, Carlos Dunlap, you add Michael Kendricks to this roster of your defense, now you really have a good solid group of depth, talent, and overall starting level ability. The problem with this group for Seattle, especially up front, is they've lacked starting level ability. They're starters and backups, and those two roles can't be understated. So what I mean by that is the Seahawks, quite frankly, at the defensive line position, has had a lot of players in their backup roles who are fringe NFL players. They're not solid backups. So now what you've done is you've added really good players. And if Carlos Dunlap can recapture the play that he's played with his entire career. This is the first season in which he's seen a dip in production. If he can be his normal self, now Benson Mayoa is able to play a backup role, a role player role, which is what he really excels at. So now you're putting guys in better positions just overall. Your pressure packages become better. So this group becomes from historically worse to a more complementary team. I think that that is the ultimate goal with this defense, and I think they can get this done here in the next 2 weeks.
Fourth. Yeah, I've been wondering this myself. I have no idea what the San Francisco offense is. So what do they do offensively that's going to test the Seahawks defense, Jake?
Well, first and foremost, they do a great job running the football. That's where it all starts for the San Francisco 49ers offense. But what they also do is they do a great job of getting their playmakers the ball in space. You're going to see Debo Samuel get fly sweeps. You're going to see him line up even in the backfield and carry the football. You're going to see him get quick hitters in the screen game and in RPO games. George Kittle, the same thing. They do a great job of getting guys, another one, Brandon Ayuk. They have three guys that they can really spread out the field and get the ball in their hands in a variety of ways. Not deep down the field, because Jimmy Garoppolo is not a good deep thrower as a quarterback. But they do an excellent job through screens, through manipulation of motions and shifts to get the ball out quickly and into the hands of their playmakers, who do an awesome job of making run after catches. And that's where the Seahawks have to, they have to do better in this matchup versus the San Francisco 49ers than what they did last year. They have to be able to be disciplined. And once that guy, once a playmaker like Kittle, Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, they touch the ball, they've got to be suffocated immediately, because they can make a big play happen out of nothing.
It's dark. If you missed the show, you can always listen via the 710 Sports app powered by Dubin Law Group. We've got Mina Kimes, a favorite of mine, love her, coming up at 2 p.m. We've also got sound from Pete Carroll, who's speaking with the reporters, coming up at 2:30 p.m. So lots and lots of news to get to. First, though, we're going to get back to this Carlos Dunlap trade in the halftime show. That's next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show, it's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. Time to go through our top stories of the day. Getting started with the obvious one, you guys. The Seahawks have made a trade. It's for Carlos Dunlap. Is he going to be a difference maker or a season saver? I like that that rhymes. I didn't come up with it, but I'm going to go ahead and take credit for it. You're welcome. I think Carlos Dunlap makes a huge difference to this defense. Literally anyone makes a difference for this defense. They are in dire need of help, on pace to shatter the NFL record set by the Saints back in, what was that, 2012, for most yards allowed through a full regular season. I think they're on pace for almost 7,700 yards. That is insane. Insane. The yardage allowed by both teams in this game tied for the most since the regular season of 2013. Seahawks need help. And a lot of that starts right up front with their pass rush. I know they aren't getting a starter, but that wasn't really an option for them. Not just with the trade capital, but with what teams are willing to part ways with come this November 3rd trade deadline. So, Jake, what did you make of the Carlos Dunlap addition, and are they done adding?
Well, I think this is a great trade for them. This is one that they had to make, and it's a great trade for multiple reasons. It's great to get the addition of the player, but it's also great that they weren't able – They didn't have to give up much. They gave up a seventh-round pick. They gave up a player in B.J. Finney, who was their worst offseason addition this year. He was eating up a decent amount of cap space for them. They cleared around $2 million for B.J. Finney there. So overall, this was a very good, solid trade for John Schneider and the Seahawks. Now, with Carlos Dunlap, the question will remain, and nobody really has the answer to this question. Is this more of a disgruntled player who needs a new change of scenery, or is this a guy who is 31 years old and this is kind of the drop-off point for him from a production standpoint? After I've watched the film and I've watched him play, my determination right now is that it is the former. It is the fact that this guy was a disgruntled player. Stacey, you said that he wasn't a starter. he was demoted from his starting role, but this is a starting level caliber pass rusher in this league. He still has that ability. He still can be that type of player, and that's why I think this is a really good move. Doesn't fix all your problems on defense, that's for sure, but a very good, solid addition.
I like the trade.
Like the idea of the trade, making moves?
Yeah, well, I mean, sometimes, like, and I listened again to what Paul and Danny said in the update there. The trade in and of itself is fine. A, you know, just trying anything to get better is a good idea. And clearing up a little bit of cap space, that's great too. But if it doesn't yield any positive results, then it's kind of a nothing deal. That's
what's
just
a
where
positive result
going.
For you?
What
sack total for
you? You want me to give you like a stat?
I do. I want you to give me a stat, a single stat, sack total, quarterback hits, where Seattle ranks at the end of the year. What would make this a successful trade in your mind? You gave up BJ Finney, who had only played special team snaps for you, essentially, and what was it, a sixth rounder, seventh rounder? I don't remember the other pick, but that's what you gave up. Little to nothing in your trade. You get Carlos Dunlap. What makes this worthwhile to you?
How many games is he going to end up playing? Let's see.
It starts next
week.
We're
through next, so he'll have played in like 8 games, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's look at his usual sack total: 9, 8, 7, 8, 13. All right, we'll say 8's what he averages, just for the sake of argument. If he can give me 4 sacks, he can hit the quarterback. Like, he averages about, 25 a year? Let's say he hits him 8 to 10 times, hurries him even more, generates some level of, consistent pressure, even if those sacks don't come in those exact numbers. Like, if he's a average pass rusher, then it will have really paid off.
Now, do you not like
it
because you
success?
Now, do you not like it because you don't expect him to get to 4 sacks and 8 quarterback hits?
I don't expect him to do any of that.
You don't expect him to get a sack?
Why?
Well, he could get one, but he's only has one.
Why are you so definitive that that's what he's not going to be a nothing player?
Definitive?
Yeah, I mean you're very confident that he's very confident that he's not going to produce that. So I'm just trying to understand where that's coming from.
I mean,
stats?
I just said. Yeah, and plus the fact that they benched him on a team that isn't very good. I mean, did they bench him because it was personal? Really?
Yes.
Like, that's why they did that?
Yes.
Look, it may...
It's not ridiculous because think about this. He was posting his own house listing during a game. He was posting the rotation of their defensive end position before games. I mean, it became so bad there that, he was doing everything he could to get himself out. And when you do that, you put yourself in the doghouse. I mean, whether you're Jamal Adams or you're Carlos Dunlap or you're anybody else in this league, you start doing stuff that's detrimental to the team in their view, then, you're going to get benched. You're not going to get played, and you're going to get traded away, which is exactly what he was hoping to have happen. So we'll see how this ends up panning out.
You want me to tell you why I'm definitive on it, though?
Yes.
By the way, I'm not definitive. I'm just estimating. Nobody knows it's going to happen. I'm just guessing. But if you want me to give you more stats, I mean, the percentage of snaps that he did play this year by game, 70, 52, 82, 75, 46, 45, 23. So they've gone down the last 3 games. But even before that, he had 1 game where he made 9 solo tackles. Okay, that's a little odd. But that's an outlier. In every other game, he either had 1 or 0. So to say he's going to come in here and be this, an elite pass rusher, just below elite pass rusher, I don't see any evidence of that, that's all.
Well, I don't think anybody's saying that he's going to come in and be an elite pass rusher, but I don't think he's over the hill. And when you look at Carlos Dunlap and what he's done, I'll give you a great example of this. Benson Mayoa, 7 sacks last year. Well, if you actually do a deep dive on his sack total, it was at the very beginning of the season, and then he falls off. So to my point is, I think there's a lot more going on with Cincinnati and, you know, kind of that organization as a whole than it is necessarily about Carlos Dunlap and his ability or lack thereof at this point and him aging. I think that him coming to this organization, him getting a chance to have a fresh start, a new place, is going to be helpful. And hopefully at this stage in Carlos Dunlap, he's able to turn it around and have a really strong second half of the season. We'll have to wait and see how it goes. No one's going to know one way or the other. But from what I've been able to see from watching his film, there is nothing that tells me that there is a major flaw physically that's going to keep him from that. Like Ziggy Ansah, like anybody else that you could bring up that maybe the Seahawks have brought in their later stages, that clearly they have lost a step, that they're not the same player. Carlos Dunlap, to me, so far from my evaluation, doesn't seem to be that type of player. So hopefully it is a boost. Hopefully it is a boost because they're going to need it. They're dead last.
That's the thing. The way I look at it, you guys, is that it is something. Like, I have a hard time believing he will be worse than what you have right now, because you aren't starting with, hey, we've got a pretty good basic foundation of a pass rush and we need to add to it. This isn't even, I know that it was compared to this, this isn't adding Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett. This is adding, like, literally a body on the line to help you. Right now, your sack leader on the team is Jamal Adams, who hasn't played since midway through week 3. He remains your sack leader on this team. That's a problem. Literally anyone helps.
We still have to have some standards, though. I mean, you're right. I agree. Anyone helps. But we still have to have some standards for what's...
To me, it's
adequate.
Right. To me, though, it's like when you go, it's what you gave up. By the way, the Cincinnati Bengals have confirmed the trade. When you give up a 7th round pick in 2021 and then a center that you're not using at all, you've used him only for special team snaps for a pass rusher. It's a bargain find. It's like me going to a bargain shop, a secondhand store, whatever, and then knowing that, like, whatever I'm going to get, I'm probably going to have to refurbish it a little. I'm probably going to have to maybe sew on another button. There's going to be some, I'm not going to go and I'm not going to find something brand new, tag still on, that you can go find in the store. That's not what I'm giving up to get that. If I'm spending $5 on something, I know that it's not going to be perfect, and I know I'm going to have to probably do something to it. The idea of what the Seahawks have found here is someone that can help them for a bargain with what they can afford to spend. Teams aren't up here willing to part ways with, you know, Myles Garrett or whatever. Like, you have to do what you can right now. There's not a premier edge rusher the Seahawks can acquire, nor can they afford to acquire. So I think that, like, that's the standard right now. The standard is, like, what's the bargain bin, the best bargain bin one you can find. All right, we are going to get back to the World Series, plus some NFL news about stadium capacity for the Super Bowl. That's coming up next in the Timeline.
This is the Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Welcome into the Timeline. I'm Tom, Jake, and Stacy, reading you guys the top stories you're going to see on your own Twitter timelines. We'll get you caught up with today's news, some news from over the weekend. We'll get this started in the MLB. MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred was slurring his words in the World Series trophy presentation last night, leading to a lot of speculation on social media about why that might be. So here's the sound at cut number 5.
It's time to present the Willie Mays World Series Most Valuable Player Award presented by Chevrolet. And once again, to present that honor, the Commissioner of Baseball, Rob Manfred.
You thrilled our fans throughout the postseason with a great performance. You led the Dodgers to a World Series victory, and it's my pleasure to recognize your great play with the Willie Mays Most Valuable Player Award presented by Chevrolet.
Okay, I hadn't listened to the sound before, so I didn't actually realize it was that bad. I want to say a couple things right off the bat. Number one, if he's drink, I don't like calling people out for being like, maybe he was drunk. Here's him slurring. Like, it's just not something I love doing, because who cares if you're having a good time? Two, if it is a medical issue, I never want to be that person. Like, that always feels really harsh. But that's pretty noticeable. That is pretty noticeable, you guys.
I'm not going to give him the benefit of the doubt.
You think he's
but those stadium mics, when you're talking on, like, from field level,
yeah,
the delay between what you're saying and what goes over the PA, if
see,
that is off,
that.
That can throw you off in a big way.
Because I'm thinking if I was talking during a present, like, there have been times when I was on air for something the other day for my first TV hit, and I was talking, and I didn't realize that you would hear the sound from highlights in your earpiece while you're talking. You can't hear it on the TV broadcast, but you can hear it in your ear. So I kind of stumbled over my words in that moment. It didn't sound like I was drunk, but I'm thinking, like, what if there was a moment where any one of us are talking and... I mean, you're not going to think it for Jake, but when any one of us are talking and someone thinks, like, oh, man, that sounds weird, I'd be mortified. Right? Are we being mean?
No, definitely not. But I also to go along the line, that's happened to me on live TV, where the producer was giving, you know, like a post-game reaction, and the producer talked in my ear,
yeah,
and brought something up that I was totally not ready for. And it threw me off for 5 seconds, and that 5 seconds to me felt like 15.
It feels
to
like an eternity.
But you know,
when
so,
you were a player,
I understand.
Jake?
No, just last year.
Jake
just
does
last
post-game.
Year when I was on a post-game.
Yeah.
Every now and then, so it was something that just, like, totally caught me off guard, because the person was asking me a question at the same time the producer was talking to me. So I didn't hear anything that person said. So, but look, Rob Manfred, easy person to not like, easy person to, you know, kind of rage against. And, even if it's unfair,
I was really hoping he wasn't having a stroke or something
like
that.
Bad.
I mean, honestly, oh, it was bad. I mean, I noticed it actually before that one. He spoke, I forget what it was. He was presenting something else. But I was like, oh, that's weird. And then it got worse in the bite that we heard there. Look, as far as the delay, I mean, all those reasons that you guys brought up are legitimate, except there's one strange thing, which is that when you hear on-field presentations, whether it's the Super Bowl or the NBA Finals or whatever else, usually you don't hear people having this problem. Like, why was this unique to him?
It's true, and that's another question that is very interesting in this situation, because usually you already have your script, you already know what you're going to say. It's not like this is all new to you. Oh man, I have to all of a sudden present the award. What am I going to say? Like,
and if it's
I don't understand that.
And if it's delayed audio in his earpiece, well, then what does he need an earpiece for? I mean, he doesn't need to get commands from the producer. All he has to do is answer Verducci's questions and get out of there.
From the 425, Stacy sounds drunk all the time. Well, maybe the drunk people you hang out with are all really funny with great puns, and that's why you think that. Next story here, you guys. This literally makes me depressed. I don't know how I'd handle it. I'm curious to know what you guys think. This is from ESPN. A stat correction that changed a sack to a tackle for loss in the Chicago Bears-LA Rams game Monday night caused a 41-year-old insurance agent in St. Louis who was playing in a DraftKings contest to lose almost $1 million in first prize money. So basically, the way that it had been worked out, he was on pace to make this $1 million prize money because of a sack that had been credited to the Bears defense late in the fourth. But because that's changed, by the way, this is only just now updated. So he sees it. He thinks he's won $1 million. He calls his family. He goes to take his dog for a walk. He comes back. He refreshes the computer and all of it's gone because afterwards that stat is changed. He ends up winning just a measly $3,078.94. I would want to go to sleep for 5 days.
That would be one of the most depressing things ever. I think that it's one of those things when you look at this situation, That to me would be so depressing because I would be going nuts. And for him to go back and check and refresh that, I wouldn't have done that. I probably would have been a whole day, a whole night of
I'd just be thinking.
I had won $1 million, Stacey. I would just be losing my mind.
Every single year when they would do the $1 billion bracket or whatever. Is it Warren Buffett that would do it? Who does it for March Madness, Warren Buffett? There was one year where I got through like – just the first round, mostly perfect. And there was a couple games left to play. So, like, normally I'm out pretty early because I make too many risky moves. You guys, I'm not kidding. I was already like, do I start shopping online? Like, I'm going to win so much money. Do I start building my shopping carts now? What's the deal here? Tom, how would you take this?
You know, I don't know how I would take it. I'd be devastated, first of all. But I want to react to what you just said there. Like, when you think that you may be coming into good fortune.
You're planning.
With like, yeah, with no basis whatsoever. Like, I remember once, I tried to make a bet online, okay? And I was successful. I forget what I bet on. But because of that, I convinced myself, like, oh, I'm going to do this all the time. I'm going to have, like, all this extra money for, like, you know, to be able to buy whatever I want. I was planning out, you know, all this great fortune I was going to have. Yeah, that did not turn out that way.
It's weird knowing, too, that it's all changed because just some official scorer is like, you know what? I'm actually going to change that from a sack to a tackle for a loss. Like, one person decided, like, this looks more like a tackle for a loss to me than a sack. And for this guy, it had to be a sack. Like, that's what it had to be in order for this to count. Ugh. So,
that's gut-wrenching.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah,
it's awful. Also, do you guys do that thing where, I think if I became a multimillionaire, I would still shop at all the same places. I would just spend a lot more
do
money.
Do you, though?
Like,
would you?
Yes, Jake. I mean, would I buy, like, a yacht or something absurd? Sure. But I think I would go
I think you would change. You would change.
Personality-wise, I think I would become insufferable. If I became verified on Twitter, I would become insufferable, much less if I became a billionaire. But as far as, like, where I'm spending the money, I've just been a certain way for most of my life that I think I'd still be, like, okay, here I go into this, like, bargain shopping, or like,
I think you would completely forget about us. You would be going to all these different stores, and you know, Tom and I would be walking to the mall, the normal mall, and here you are coming out. Your Mercedes is getting pulled up to you, the valet coming out of, you know, whatever, Gucci or whatever.
Exactly.
And you'd be like, do I even know you?
Sorry,
that's who you would
is
be.
Is it Jeff? Jeff and
is it? Jeff
and Terry. That's what it was. Jeff and Terry.
That's exactly
all right.
Who you
One did. Of my favorites, Mina Kimes of ESPN, joins us next. We're going to talk about this upcoming game for the Seattle Seahawks and, of course, their latest trade. That's next on Tom, Jake, and Stacey.